Well, the time has rolled around again when we're ready to make our Robin Ray Spring Good Neighbor Award. Quarterly, during the year, we look through the letters. People who have been nominated for Good Neighbors. And we bring one or two to the final runoff. And the spring winner this year is Miss Matilda Proudfoot, who is here with us. And she's a lovely lady. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the story of how you were nominated?
Well, thank you very much. I'm from Minnesota, a small town in the north. In Minnesota, I don't know whether you've heard of it. Sauk Center.
Well, yes, I've heard of it, of course.
And it was there that I performed my good deed that has brought me all this fame, and now, I believe, tremendous fortune.
Miss Proudfoot, you are flown here and put up at the Bob and Ray Hotel, and I hope that you're having a good time for yourself. Just what was the award given for, could you tell us?
Well, there's a lovely neighbor of mine lived across the street, and they had run into...
Back in Sauk Center?
Yes, and they had run into some sort of a financial reverse, and they were being evicted from their home.
A good friend of yours?
Yeah, well, yeah. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't pay the rent, and they had moved all the furniture out onto the sidewalk in the street, and it was, as you know, gets pretty chilly up that part of the
country.
Certainly
does. That's
that part of the U.S.,
yes.
And it was maybe 12 below zero, and it was a light but persistent snowfall, maybe.
And there was your neighbor out on the sidewalk?
Sitting on the sofa, they were. And the snow was coming down. It was quite cold, and my heart just ached.
I don't blame you, Miss Proudfoot. That certainly was a predicament to be in. And how did you help this neighbor and thereby put yourself in line for this spring Good Neighbor Award from us?
I baked them a dozen brownies.
Certainly shows the generosity of your big heart and your good neighborliness in helping out friends in need. I'm sure they were appreciative.
They loved them.
As are we to you for having come here to tell us this story. And we want you to have this scroll, which will be a memento of your visit.
Oh, the scroll's okay, but where's the, you know...
And so, once again, we've made our good neighbor happy.
The folding stuff?
Miss Matilda Proudfoot of Sauk Center.
A little green, a little long green.
Been here for the Spring Bob and Ray Good Neighbor Award. Thanks again to Miss Proudfoot.
I thought it would work out this way.
And now back inside.
To Wally Ballou now at Round Knob, Connecticut, for another interview on American industry on the march. Come in, please. Wally Ballou.
Radio's all fired, Wally Ballou, from Round Knob, Connecticut, the Triangle T-Square Corporation. The sounds of heavy industry in motion as T-Squares are being turned out by, I would say, the 50s or 60s. The manager of this plant, which is one of seven plants turning out T-Squares, standing beside me now and will tell us a little bit about the operation of the factory and, of course, the use of its products, T-Square. Mr. Hummel?
How do you do? My name is Googling.
I was told it was a Mr. Hummel I was supposed to talk
Mr.
to.
Mr. Hummel is my immediate boss, but he and the missus went off for a weekend.
Well, you are Mr.
And he's a little afraid to go on the air, I understand.
Nothing to be afraid of, Mr. Googling.
Googling.
Tell me this. You have six other plants. Do they all make the same thing?
They all make T-squares except the one up in Dover, Foxcroft, Maine. That makes yardsticks.
Have you been with the firm long, Mr. Googling?
Ever since I was separated from the service.
Which was?
1899.
That's rather an unusual name. Is that Scottish or... What's the derivation of Googling?
I don't know. I think it's part Irish, and that's about it, I think. It's part Irish.
You've been here for quite a number of years. You've seen T-squares.
Calvin Gall.
What's the big difference of T squares this year, sir? Could you tell us? Give us a preview of the new line.
Say the T square of yesteryear.
Yes.
Well, there isn't much difference except that we're going into colors. We're trying to, expand the market somehow or other. And what we're trying to shoot for here now is planned obsolescence. In other words, a fellow who has a T-square, we want him to feel that after 2 years he's got to chuck it and get a new one.
Well, of course, you folks here at Triangle have been leaders in the field for quite a long while. I don't know how much competition there is. There must be some. Because all of the T-squares I see aren't Triangle T-squares. They're made by other people, too. See what my notes. I have a few more notes here. You're married, Mr. Googling?
Yes, I am.
Uh-huh. Notice the extremely unusual weather that we've been having?
Yes, it's been nice weather, except when it was bad there.
Well, thanks for talking with us. I think our radio time is up now. And this is Radio's highly regarded Wally Ballou, returning it to our main studios.
I'm sure the name Captain Parker Gibbs of Gloucester, Massachusetts is familiar to many of you. Last year, he was the founder of a group endeavoring to sponsor fish for Thanksgiving dinner. Later, I believe he tried to get us to eat something else for Christmas dinner, other than the traditional turkey. Captain Gibbs is here with us now. What was it, fish for Christmas, Captain Gibbs?
Roast lamb.
Well, both of those campaigns, of course, failed in their endeavor. What is it that you're working on now? You have a new drive on?
That's right, Bob and Ray. I'm here on behalf of the Pizza Institute to more or less promote the Pizza for Easter theme that we've developed over there.
Well, now,
in other words, rather than the ham that has been so traditional for Easter Sunday for many, many years, the pizza manufacturers thought they'd like to get in on a little bit of that.
And they heard of you, of course.
I went over to them and suggested the idea, and they snapped at it.
Then you are out of the fish business completely, is that right?
Except that one of the varieties of pizza is a tuna-type pizza that I'm pushing on the side.
Kind of
a little kickback there from the Fish Institute.
I see. You've got to try to tie them both together.
If I can do that, then, of course, it's money in both pockets.
Well, what have you done so far, Captain Parker, to Gibbs, to get people interested in this movement? It seems like rather
difficult. Well, I have little stickers that I put on the backs of people's coats. I go up and I'll say, "How are you?"
And slap him on the back.
Slap it on and it says, "Pizza for Easter" on it. That's the first thing I've done.
How's the reaction been to that?
Well, I don't know. We'll have to wait. And I also have chalk and I write on the sidewalks, "Pizza for Easter."
Yeah, have you been caught doing that? Or?
Well, I do it late at night, and fortunately, I haven't been caught yet.
Well, do you think there's more chance that this campaign will be successful?
I don't see any reason why it shouldn't be. I mean, I've looked at this from all angles, Bob, and I can't see how Pizza for Easter can miss.
Sounds like a natural to me, and certainly want to wish you a great deal of luck with it. Come back after Easter and let us know how it's...
I certainly will, and I want to thank you and all your wonderful cohorts here at this network for giving me this time.
Sorry, we had nothing else to do with it anyway.
Oh.
Well, it's just like old times when we welcome back one of the greatest guys in show business. A friend of just about all of our listeners, I guess, and a friend of ours of many years. Star of stage, screen, television, radio, and the orchestra world, Barry Campbell. Barry, you're welcome.
How are you doing?
You must be happy, huh?
Well, I'm very pleased the way things have developed, Bob, over the last 20 minutes.
Well, I've been reading about it, Barry, in the papers, and I guess it's come to full fruition now.
I believe it has.
Tell everybody all about it.
But I'm going over to Europe in a cultural exchange deal.
Just how is this going to tie in with your theatrical or entertainment career, Bear?
Well, I don't know how that's all going to dovetail in, Bob. I'm going over at my own expense. And I'm going to appear first at the capital of Belgium there, yep. Liège, something. And I'm going over there. And from there, I'm going up to Switzerland.
Oh, wonderful. Up to Switzerland, huh?
That's right. Then I'm going down to Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going up to Yugoslavia. Then I'm going down to the Crimea and then up to Moscow. And then down to Istanbul.
Well, you certainly have... Go ahead.
I'm going to cut over to Cairo and then shoot down to Johannesburg.
Well, what do you expect in exchange, or what may we here in this country expect in exchange for your culture, Bear Campbell?
Well, now, I'm sure I'm not up on that, Bob. I think that you'll have some people coming over here to exchange culture with you in the States, while I'll be over there exchanging our culture, more or less, with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that kind of... makes it quite clear, and
Bring my button-down collars, try to show those off a little bit, a little bit of America.
Horizontal striped ties, I suppose.
Some
that kind of
regimental striped ties. I'm going to bring some shoes, typically American shoes of the Italian style.
I have a funny story about that. I was over in Europe a couple of years ago,
and
they bought some shoes in Portugal and brought them back, and they squeaked quite a bit. And I've never been able to wear them since.
Is that so? Well, I understand they have a different last.
That's what I heard after I purchased them.
And, of course, American manufacturers have gotten the squeak out of shoes years ago.
Yes, all right, Barry Campbell. Cultural exchange for Europe taking place this week. You're leaving this week at your own expense, I guess. Will you report into us when you come back?
I'd love to.
When can we look for you back here so I can mark it down on our Bob and Ray calendar?
About January, I think.
In January.
Because looking at this list, I don't know. You see, I can't afford air travel. It'll have to be train and boat.
Yeah. Well, we'll
public
look for
transportation.
You. Look for you the beginning of next year, then.
Right.
Good.
Thank you.
Well, Ray, that bomb interview is here.
Sakes. Wilbur!
Hello, Bob and Ray.
Wilbur Feely, the world-famous bomb deactivator, back again.
Thank you very much.
Tell us, where have your travels been taking you?
Well, mostly back to the doctor for checkups.
Since the last
Bomb deactivation experimentation.
Uh-huh. Well, now here in this huge box, I gather, is what would be considered a blockbuster, right?
That's right. This is a small, comparatively small, 30-pounder.
Mm-hmm.
That I brought along for experimental purposes. It is much similar to the last one, which I deactivated unsuccessfully.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, now, Wilbur, again, I think...
I'm going to step out now, Ray, if
right.
you carry on.
I think Bob and I will go outside, and I think it would be better if you just described what you were doing, Wilbur.
Well, all right.
As you go along.
If I may have that lapel microphone.
All right. And good luck to you, Wilbur. I'll see you around.
No danger in your staying here if you care to. I've got my tools here and my lapel microphone. The bomb is on the table. First, we have to remove the nose cone or cap. And we do that very carefully so as not to jingle the bomb. We just lay it on the table. There. This exposes the three wires, which I'm sure you're familiar with, the green, the red, and the blue. The secret, of course, in deactivating a bomb successfully is to snip the wires in the proper succession. Blue, green, and red is the way I guess this one is set up. So first, we carefully snip the blue one. And everything is okay. Now it's a toss-up between the green or the red. Doesn't really make too much difference at this point because it's after you snip two that something could go wrong if the other one remaining is the wrong one. So I'll snip the red one. And two-thirds of our job is done. Now, it's a matter of snipping the third or the green wire. The bomb then will be completely deactivated. I'm just going to turn my head slightly the other way as I snip number three.
It's time now for a look at industry on the march. So we take you to Wally Ballou at the main factory of the Fat Donner and Sproul Company in Long Island City, New York.
This is radio's Wally Ballou, who's been chosen by the State Department to broadcast my golden voice over Radio Moscow as part of the cultural exchange, speaking to you from the materials receiving department of the Fat Donner and Sproul Company. I'm standing with Mr. Sproul, who is going to show us just how all this stuff is processed and shaped to form the product as we all know it so well. Mr. Sproul, how are you, sir?
Well, not too well, Wally. First of all, business is not what it should be. And then, of course, I have an ulcer there.
No, I didn't know that.
Yes. And my little lady wrapped up my new car. And my son, Calvin, was thrown out of military school just last Tuesday.
Well, that's just wonderful.
So wonderful about it.
I wasn't listening. I was trying to think of the next question I was going to ask.
Well, pay attention if you want me to show you around here.
Well, Mr. Sproul, would you tell us what happens to the stuff after it arrives here?
Well, it's loaded on a conveyor belt and carried into this next room here. This department is called the decomposing room, and as you can see, quite a change in it has been effected.
Well, I'll say, that's certainly
I'd like
right.
you to meet our decomposed foreman, Sam Bagatelli.
How do you do, Mr. Ballou?
Fine, thank you. Could you tell me how you...
Come along now into this next department. Right here, you see, they're pressed into the familiar
elliptical?
That's it, yes. A famous illet shape prior to the addition of the functional parts. This gentleman here is one of our elliptical workers, Phil Garx. Say hello to Mr. Ballou, Garx.
Hello, Mr. Ballou.
Nice to see you, Phil. Say, don't you ever get tired of just...
Moving on to this next section, we call it the rapid assembly and testing department here.
I see, after they come to the elliptical department, they're tested and rapidly assembled.
No, it's the other way around, Ballou. They're rapidly assembled and then they are tested. Now, I'd like you to meet my assembly and testing foreman, Marvin Flemick, and Timmy Dombrowski. Fellas, this is Radio's Wally Ballou.
Well, how do you do, fellas?
Hello there.
Hiya, Timmy and Marvin.
It's not too
can
much
I see
time.
You assemble one, Timmy?
No time for that now. We have to move on to the next department here.
Well, we're moving.
Well, see, in here, they're painted in 280-some-odd different colors. Dried and packed, ready for distribution throughout the free world.
That's amazing, Mr. Sproul. Could I lift one up?
Certainly may, but be very careful.
Oh, they're much heavier than I thought they would be.
Yes, they are. And you may have that one as a memento of your visit to Fat Donner and Sproul.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Sproul. It's really been most informative, rewarding, and profitable visit to your company. And now this is Radio's Wally Ballou returning it to...
Well, this past week, of course, was... income tax deadline time, and here with an up-to-the-minute report on matters fiscal and otherwise is our United States Northeast Regional Interbureau Coordinating Administrator, Clyde L. Hap Whartney. Hap, it's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much. First of all, I want to thank the president of the Broadcasting Company and all the affiliated stations for making this free time available to me and my office.
I presume
that... Certainly, I know that radio time is very valuable, and for them to find 3 or 4 minutes or less even for me is deeply appreciated by my staff and personnel.
Hap, I presume that since this past week has been an important one in our nation's capital, that... your visit here has something to do with income tax. Is that true?
Absolutely not, mm-hmm. Bob. That does not fall under my jurisdiction at all. You know, I work at the Interbureau Coordinating Office. And
you administer for it.
Let's get that part straight.
That's right. I administer for the Interbureau Coordinating Office. And as you know, I have the 5 New England states and Rhode Island. Plus, of course, Indiana.
Well, Rhode Island is considered one of the New England states.
In that case, we'll make the phrase the 6 New England states, then, and Indiana. And I'd like to point out to all the housewives and homemakers who may be listening that my men will be, within the next 3 or 4 weeks, calling upon you and asking you all sorts of questions. I would request that you be as cordial and as helpful as possible to them. You could possibly invite them in for coffee and sinkers.
Well, this, then, of course, is the spring field trip by the representatives of your office, which is located in Bennington, Vermont, I believe, the headquarters. And this will be the spring group of reports, which will then be collated by your staff and forwarded to Washington for their attention and action should it be necessary. Is that a fairly fair statement?
Bob, I'd hate to answer that. It seemed to me like several thoughts in that one question. To sift through them, I'd say that this is the time of year for our spring quizzing, as you say. Some of that other stuff I don't know about.
Well, suffice to say that the material will eventually reach its proper destination in Washington, our nation's capital, where it will be acted upon should such action be necessary.
Yes, that's more, you've hit it there.
That's more equivocal.
Huh? That's right. Now, once again, as you know, we've had a lot of trouble at the office, particularly in view of the fact that I made a trip down to Washington trying to find out... Do I am taking up too much of your time?
If you can just kind of wrap it up quickly, I think it will be appreciated.
Well, I would say, then, that when our men call upon you, to be as cordial and as helpful, and don't hide anything from them. We'll find out anyway.
The Administrator for Regional Coordination of Interbureaus for the Northeast States and Indiana, Clyde L. Hap-Watney. A pleasure to have you here again, sir. A doff of the Bob and Ray hat to you. Speaking to you from the Bob and Ray cafeteria, you've heard from the chef who handles the menus here, but this week we're going to have something a little different. We've decorated the place and invited a group of hobbyists to come in and make use of our facilities and to spread their hobbies out here for all and sundry to view. Ray, have you someone over there?
Yes, I have, Bob. I'd like you to meet Mr. Wilbur. Was it Farris, sir?
Farris.
Farris. Mr. Wilbur Farris. Where are you from, sir?
I'm from Wilmette, Illinois.
Well, with your name and all, it's more or less euphonic. Sir?
No, it's English.
Oh, I didn't mean it that way, sir. Tell me, what is this what is this thing you have spread out here in front of us?
This is my hobby, Mr. Goldie.
Yes?
This I've been collecting for some years now. I probably have the largest collection of them east of the Mississippi, perhaps in the entire United States.
Well, I might point out to you, sir, that we are on the radio, and people don't know what you're speaking of when you say you have the largest collection of them. Could you explain what they are?
I spoke that way because I mean of purple ones like this.
Yes, I notice. I assume purple ones, then, are very hard to find.
They're the most valuable. Next comes orange, then magenta, and the least valuable are series 4.
Excuse me, do those cigarette ashes go in your soup, sir? I'm awfully sorry.
No, I've finished that.
Oh, all right.
And delicious food, I might say, too, here at the Bob and Ray cafeteria.
Oh, it's been nice talking to you, sir.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you, and if you ever want to trade, if you start in collecting these and you want to trade, look me up.
Good. Bob is Wilbur Farris. Yes, Wilbur. Bob is signaling me now from the other side of the cafeteria. He obviously has someone over there.
Hi, Ray. I heard you on my earphones, and I do have a lady hobbyist who's here. And we're standing just in front of the little window where the dirty dishes are put through to the kitchen for washing. And it may be a little hard to hear, but, ma'am, if you'll speak right up and tell us about your hobby, we'd like to hear it.
Well, I have here in this large suitcase, I think the largest collection of them
in America. I know there's a lady in England who has been collecting them, I believe, longer than me.
Uh-huh.
And probably has a nicer collection. I do not know, and I won't say
You've
one way or the
it.
Other.
You but just arrived here at Hobby Hall.
As, that's right.
We're calling it this week, and you haven't even spread the collection out yet, have you?
No, I haven't taken them out of the bag yet.
Still
suitcase.
In the suitcase.
Here, I'll just take them out and...
That's very, extremely light. I was surprised. I hefted it before you went on the air. The suitcases, they don't weigh much, do they?
No, they're not. Of course, the good ones don't. You can have poor ones or imitations or cheap
mm-hmm.
ones, and they're heavy. It would be awfully hard to carry them
this,
about.
Is this real lapis lazuli here?
Yes, it is. That's
boy.
Genuine. Now, here you are. There it is. 12 of them.
12, and that, of course, represents a rather sizable number, actually, when you consider what they are. Well, it's wonderful to see these, and I know that you'll enjoy your stay here.
Thank you.
Hi-ho, Wow.
Hi-ho, Webley Webster, and book review time now, as we turn to literature and with the help of the Webley Webster players, present another excerpt from a bestseller or an old classic.
This is an old classic, Bob, and I recommend this for kids and for old folks, too. I mean, old gappers will enjoy this.
I see.
And so will youngsters.
Is this one that we remember?
Do you forget Rebecca of Tenable Farm?
Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, certainly one of the great all-time stories. And I agree with you, both the kids and the grown-ups will probably enjoy the excerpt which you're going to give. What the scene of the players chosen?
This happens early in the book, Bob. Second chapter. It seems the boat's about 4 days to sea. I'm searching for the route to the Near East to bring back fighters. And as we look in on them, we find that the first mate is just reporting to the captain.
You sit for me, Captain?
Why, no. Oh,
taking it easy, sir.
Keep a civil tongue in your head. Of course I sent for ye, mate.
What can I be after doing for you, sir?
Why, you... Oh, you didn't fall that time, matey. Well,
oh, sorry,
I'll
sir.
I'll fix that. I hit, ye stay hit. Up off on the deck,
mate. Aye, aye, sir.
Where be my logbook?
Right here, sir.
Turn it open, matey.
I open it to the third day of our present voyage. Opposition.
Why,
some...
you...
Go.
I didn't ask ye to turn to page 3 of our present trip, now did I, mate?
I said the third day out, sir. That's where we are now. Third day out, meridian 40, latitude 44, longitude 68.
Why, you...
Oh, you didn't even come to that time.
No, but that's a very exciting story.
I don't
story.
Remember that, though, in Rebecca's Sunnybrook Farm. What, that's in the first part of the book?
Second chapter. So go ahead, get a hold of that book. You'll probably find it rather difficult to get a hold of in some of the stores, but they'll get it for you.
Okay.
Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm. It's a good book.
A good report, a good review, then, for Rebecca of Sunnybrook Farm, as it is approved by Webley Webster, Bob and Ray Literary Staff.
Bob, that phone, I think you can hear it distantly ringing there.
Right, Ray Goldworthy, and that means there's a caller coming
Bob,
up.
Huh? It's Ray Goulding, and we've been together so many years now.
That's Ray Goulding, right, Ray Goulding.
Why do I think of Goldworthy?
It means a call is coming in for one or the other of us, either Ray or myself. I'll answer it. Hello.
Hello there. Hi, Bob. Hello. Ray?
Sometimes I shouldn't pick it up. Steve Bosco, that's you, isn't it?
Hi. Is this Ray Goulding?
Ray Goulding.
Ray Goulding, is this you, Ray?
No, this is Bob Edlam.
Oh,
Bob
yes.
Elliott, I
yes,
mean.
Bob. How are you?
Fine.
Look, this is Steve.
I know.
Hey, well,
hey.
It's started.
You got something to report this week?
Yes, sir. The run for the Gun Salon now. I was watching some traditional opening games around the country this past week. I was down at our nation's capital to see the president throw out two balls.
Yeah. Look, did you get the money we sent?
Full nine innings, which
I thought was pretty normal.
Of reporting. It wasn't rained out or postponed, no fights. It went the full nine innings, and the players left the field, apparently, with no ill feeling. I think that's something worth reporting.
Look, Steve,
you
haven't...
think that these fellas are going to play 154 games from now until late September. To have them lose a game or to win a game without fighting, I think is noteworthy.
Well, it's the
beginning. Hey, Bob, look, I'm in an awful lot of financial trouble.
Again, I was going to ask if you got the money.
How's the family, Bob?
Fine,
great.
We
Everything
sent you some...
all right?
Yeah.
Good. Look, Bob, I need some loot, and I really need it fast. This is probably the tightest... Hello, Bob?
What's the matter with this?
I haven't cut off.
No, no, you haven't.
Bob! Steve!
What happened?
Oh, yeah. Hey, look, I need some money, and I need it as fast as possible.
Well, we sent you some last week. We can't keep doing this every week for reports like you gave us today.
$11,613. And could you make that certified? Because I don't want a personal check for that, Bob.
Steve, it's completely out of the question.
Bob, I threw a party for the entire Washington Senator team and the visiting
players. That's your own fault now.
They all had a wonderful filet mignon luncheon there.
Yeah.
And they all thought highly of Steve. And, of course, any glory to me is reflected off on you fellas,
well,
Bob and Ray,
at
that prominently displayed.
It's a little embarrassing to discuss
Just
this
send it to the most expensive hotel in Washington, D.C. $11,006. And now
it's
Steve rounding third and being thrown out at home.
It's that time again, gang. Yes, sir. Time to bring the winner over here to our studios who has been competing all this week with a few others at the famous Bob and Ray Bake Off.
Of course, the rules call for an unusual recipe and also that the recipe contained is made with Bob and Ray flour. And we have the winner here in our studio, a lovely little lady from... I believe you said Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, ma'am.
That is right. Now, are you Bob or Ray?
I'm Bob.
You're Bob because when we're over at the bake-off, they had these two giant blown-up pictures of you up on the stage, and while we were baking there, we could look, but I...
Couldn't look at it.
I didn't know which one was Bob and which one was
Ray.
Well,
I'm the shorter of the two.
I see.
And Ray stepped out just a moment
ago. Well, I'm very excited.
Hope he'll be here to meet you.
Yes, I'd like to meet him. I had a difficult time finding Bob and Ray flour at the stores.
Is that so? Well, our distribution, of course, isn't up to where we hope it will be very shortly.
They had a lot of those other brands,
mm-hmm.
but in so many times the clerk would say, "Well, I never heard of Bob and Ray flour," they'd say.
All right, you are Mrs. Wilbur.
Wilbur.
That's your last name?
No, that's my first name.
It's your husband's first name.
My first name is Effie. You want to put that down?
This is Effie.
E-F-F-I-E. Mm-hmm. It's gone out of style. You don't see so many Effies.
No, you don't. Miss Effie?
Do you want the last name, Tom?
Oh, I thought that was the last name.
Lands. L-E-A-R-N-D-P.
B?
P.
P?
S.
S.
O.
O. Mrs. Lyons, now what was the recipe, the prize-winning bake-off recipe?
Snapping turtles.
Oh, it sounds like a real tempting delicacy made with Bob and Ray flour.
Bob and Ray flour, molasses, brown sugar, two whites of an egg, and...
two whites, you mean
and raisins.
And... You should form this.
What you do is you mix them all with a little hot water, salt too. I put salt now.
No, I don't think you did.
Well, yeah, it's salt. And you beat it all up in a bowl, and then you make a little mold of a snapping turtle.
Uh-huh.
And you bake them in a moderate oven.
Are snapping turtles rampant where you live?
What?
Are snapping turtles rampant where you live?
No, I just thought it would be a nice idea, and I thought it would be attractive to kiddies.
And that was what won you the grand prize, of course.
What is it? There's been so much talk over there that we're all excited. I can hardly wait to find out.
Well, we're putting you up at the Bob and Ray Hotel for a vacation, 3 days, I think it is.
you have here.
Well, it's all over then, because we were 3 days baking and everything.
Yes,
and
we'll have to go back today.
My bags were in the lobby.
Well, you're going back today. We have another group coming in.
That was my first prize.
That was the winning entry, the prize for the winning entry.
Thank you.
You've had it, and thank you very much, Ms. Lands from Pittsburgh. A real pleasure to talk to you. Well, we had such success a few weeks ago with a new feature that we call the audience writes a song that we thought today we'd try it out once again and see what the results are. All right, sir. Now, none of you three people has ever written a song. Is that correct?
No, I never have.
And you're going to try to write a song, or the words to a song right here in the air. Let's begin with you, Mrs. Stanford. Will you give us the first line?
I threw a stone into the sea.
That's very similar to a first line given to us a couple of weeks ago, I think. But
not
a good one, nevertheless.
What was the first line given?
Well, it was something along that order. Let's try Mr. Stanford now.
What was it she said?
I threw a stone into the sea. We'll find out whether this is going to be a love song or a travelogue song.
I threw a stone into the sea.
Well, say something.
Well,
there's a lot of things
yes,
that rhyme with C.
I mean, that's a fairly easy word.
But I don't know whether to make this a sports song or a love song.
Well, it's kind of up to you. You could make it a heavy industry song if you so desired.
It seemed like a pretty good joke. Tee-hee.
It seemed like a pretty good joke. Tee-hee. All right. Now, our third gentleman, Mr. Harrison.
Well, now, let's try Does it have to rhyme with tee-hee, or...
No, this one wouldn't necessarily have to rhyme. This could be a different line.
The sand
can't tell from this point whether it's going to be a romantic song or not.
The sand kept rolling in and out.
The sand kept rolling in and out, and back to you, Mrs. Stanford, for the final line, which will wrap up our lyric.
I think I've got a case of the gout.
Well, that really doesn't leave it as any particular type of song, does it?
Could we hear it now, Mr. Elliott?
Yes, I'll read the whole thing back.
Will you put the music to it now?
We can't put the music to it now, but between now and next week, we may very well have this whole thing sold. It goes like this. I threw a stone into the sea. It seemed like a pretty good joke, tee-hee. The sand kept rolling in and out. I think I've got a case of the gout. Thank you, Mr. and Mrs. Stanford, and you too, Mr. Harrison, for writing our song on the air.
Wally Ballou with another remote, American Industry on the March. He's at Hackensack, New Jersey. So come in, please. Wally Ballou.
He owns Wally Ballou from the Hackensack branch of the Ebon Black Hackensack Company, makers of sacks for the trade. Mr. Black is standing beside me, and if we could just get away from the hum of these powerful motors, sir, I'd like to ask you
if I just step over here a little bit, Wally, I think we could probably answer your questions.
Mr. Black, you're greatly responsible for some of the newer innovations in the sack, is that correct?
Well, that's right. Of course, we make sacks over here at the plant for flour and potatoes, for seed and feed, for wheat, potatoes. Did I say flour?
Yes, you said that first.
What we're trying to get away from this year in the sack industry is to look like a sack. I mean, we're trying to put a little style, a little fashion into our sacks rather than just a plain thing to pour stuff into.
Well, didn't you tell me that the newest thing in flour sacks is a kind of a trapeze line?
That's right. That is where we use some lead or extruded aluminum to separate the various compartments of a sack. In other words, we have come in with an innovation, which I think is a brand spanking new idea in sacking. Whereas you can put three different items in one sack with these separators.
Certainly a time and money saver.
What?
I said it's certainly a time and money saver.
Not a money saver.
Oh, it's more
these
expensive.
These are three times as expensive as a plain sack.
How about the chemise sack you were telling me about?
The chemise sack, of course, is made out of chemise. This is an imported cloth that we pay quite a bit of money for. We put the very high test lawn seed in the chemise.
Uh-huh.
And I think our sale will adhere if you want to look at the chart.
I don't care. Think I care to, Mr. Black.
Look at it.
Well, I'll look at it, but I don't see as...
You get a look at that.
Radio listeners can't see.
Look at it.
All right, I'm looking at it now.
You'll notice that there has been a rising trend.
I can see a rise there, but it doesn't mean anything to me.
To me, it means a lot.
Your whole livelihood depends on it. If that line goes down, you're in trouble, Mr. Black.
Don't tell me that. I know it.
Well, of course you do. You're a businessman. I'm merely a radio commentator.
I'm not a very good one, either.
And as such, I think it's time to leave the Black Hackensack Company, Hackensack, New Jersey. Our thanks to Evan Black for having provided us with this interview. And now, with the story of bags, it's back to...
I don't know how many of you remember way back when one of our earliest guests was an Indian gentleman who said that he had dropped by. It's taken almost 2 years for him to complete that theatrical promise, but he's here now, and we'd like to introduce once again Geronimo. Pleasure to have you.
Me hunt many, many buffalo with bow and arrow.
I suppose you've been back on the reservation since we saw you last, Geronimo.
Me hunt many, many buffalo with bow and arrow.
I know that last time you were here, you told us some mighty interesting stories about appearing in Western TV series, films.
That's right.
And they, of course, have increased greatly since your last visit.
That's right.
You find your work pretty steadily now, do you?
Me hunt many, many buffalo with bow and arrow.
Geronimo is a big...
This has changed some.
Yes, physically it hasn't changed much, but the...
I see many new face.
Staff has changed, yes.
Many new face. We hunt many, many buffalo with bow and arrow.
What are some of the shows that you've appeared on? Could you mention some of them?
Father Know Best.
Yes.
Pepper Young Family.
Uh-huh. I was thinking more of the Western series type of thing.
Oh, Little Beaver.
Oh, you've been on that, huh? Well, that, I suppose that's a pretty good way to live.
List much bigger on show I have not been on. Much more.
More shows you have. You haven't been on.
Much more prominent list.
Well, I know
show I haven't been on. Maverick.
Mm-hmm.
Have Gun Will Travel.
Uh huh.
Have not been on Gunsmoke.
Well, then you have quite a field there to.
Have not been on 11 o'clock news.
No.
May hunt many, many buffalo. And bow and arrow.
I wonder, just in wrapping this whole thing up, if you would recall for us that wonderful call that you make when you jump from your horse and rope a wild bison. What is it that you yell, Geronimo, just as you leave the horse and hit for the ground?
Airborne troop, I yell.
Thank you very much, and next time I hope you'll drop back and see us on your next visit.
Facing me across our Bob and Ray microphone now are two gentlemen whose name is legend in the world of music, particularly popular dance band styles. The McBeebe twins and their orchestra, Quad and Clyde McBeebe. Welcome again, fellas. Very happy to see you.
Well, it's awful good to be back.
Good to be back.
To see you all again and to say hello and how are you to your fans.
Well, hello, and how are you? You were here just a week or two back. What brings you so soon?
For the summer season,
I'm putting aside
our clarinets.
You mean you're not going to play music this summer, the McBeebe twins?
We're going to play the bell and the cymbal. We've converted our station wagon, which said McBeebe Brothers Orchestra on it, to McBeebe Brothers Frozen Custard.
Well, you're branching out into another line of industrial endeavor, so to speak.
Raisin toddy special.
What?
Raisin toddy special. That's what the sign says.
You were playing in New Jersey your last engagement. What happened?
To put it bluntly,
we were a thud. A bomb.
Bomb.
You didn't go over down there at Al's Bar and Grill, huh?
That's exactly what happened. We went over to Al's Bar and Grill.
Over the whole thing, huh?
That's right.
Well, there were some rowdies there.
From college, Princeton. And they didn't take kindly to our music. And exhibited their feelings by throwing us around.
Well, I'm sorry. I hope that there were no serious mishaps.
Seven cents.
What?
That's the rest of the sign. Under raisin toddy, seven cents.
Gone up, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, everything has.
Well, good luck, and we'll look for your McBeebe twins and their orchestra ice cream wagon this summer.
Thousand Custer. Yeah.
Wherever you happen to be.
Just listen to the jingle of the friendly bell and cymbal. Cymbal.
The McBeebe twins, Claude and Clyde. Thanks, gentlemen, and goodbye.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure.
I'm on the phone with our operator. Operator, have you gotten hold of Gabe Preston?
Of course I have.
Gabe Preston, our Washington correspondent, standing by to...
Two fellows up there. And
tape his...
Let me pick up the phone. I think the whole world grinds to a stop.
Tape his news spot, which will be heard later today. Hello, Gabe.
Hi.
Are you all set with a report?
Hey, what'd you do to the operator? She's Fiona.
I noticed she was. That's too bad.
Well, it's okay. I haven't got the story yet. Look, this is pretty important. I think
you've got a big one this week.
Yeah.
Big story. Okay.
If you tape it and get it on as quickly as possible.
All right. We'll try to clear some space for it. The tape is all set. Anytime you're ready, Gabe.
Okay. I'll go right now. Hello, everybody. This is.
Wait.
Gabe
I think
Preston.
I'll tell you. What, excuse me. Hold the tape. I think I better introduce you on the tape because this could go on any time. More or less, be a frame for it, you know?
Okay, sure. Just, tell you what, you give me go ahead. You just say go ahead.
Well, I can't do that after I introduce you, so you can...
What's the matter? I thought it was going to be a little longer, introduction. Let me take it again.
Washington is the cue.
Right.
Now we switch you to our nation's capital for up-to-the-minute news from... Wait, no, I wasn't through.
Well, you said our nation's capital.
I know, but I hadn't... the thing is... We switch you to Gabe Preston in Washington. That's your cue, okay?
Right.
We don't have too much time.
Funny, I know.
Tape ready? Right. Now, for up-to-the-minute news from our nation's capital, we switch you to Washington for Gabe Preston and the news. Hello, Gabe.
Well, where's the cue?
I gave it to you, didn't I?
No, you didn't. The way you said. You said Gabe Preston in Washington, I think, and then you twisted around, I'm getting a little confused.
All right, let's work
here,
it out.
Bobby.
Let's get it worked out. Right.
Right
all. What would you like me to give you for a cue?
Here's Gabe Preston.
Okay, I tell you, why don't you just start, and then I'll put that on live when the
thing begins. Well, that's what I thought you were going to do to begin with.
All right, that's
with.
Simple. Yeah, go ahead.
This is
I
Gabe...
I didn't think about... Oh, I'm sorry. I talked
I'm
over
sorry,
you.
I was trying.
Take it again.
Right.
Tape. Oh, wait. Yep. Oh, all right, hurry up.
This is Gabe Preston... In Washington, D.C., our nation's
Gabe.
Yeah. Oh.
Gabe, they've
forget
got...
It. Forget it.
They've got to put more tape on.
Forget
they've,
it.
They've used up what they...
Forget
got.
It.
We'll call you back a little
forget
bit
it.
Later.
Take it off the machines.
Okay, operator.
Yeah, you'll be able to have it tomorrow.
That's it. Thank you, and back inside now.
Whoa.
A few weeks ago, we announced our... third annual search for Junior Bob and Ray, for young fellows who could take over our duties during the summer or vacation months of the year.
Bob, we have a couple of pests outside now, and if you'd like to bring them on, I think maybe one at a time, huh?
Well, we can bring them on one at a time, because they're going to be working as a team.
Which one of you thinks is going to be Ray?
I will, Eddie, thanks.
All right, come in, Eddie. Eddie, come over here to our microphone and be seated. How old are you, fella?
I'm 12.
12 years old. And why do you want to be, was it Ray, is it, or Bob?
I want to be Ray.
Little Ray.
Well, I have Kind of a mustache and long sideburns, like I seen you in a picture one time had.
Well, that was years
one
ago.
One of your early movies.
I haven't affected a mustache and long sideburns since that movie.
Yeah, I noticed that now. And my friend Pete Cunningham and I have teamed up and made this act up.
Yeah.
And we think it's pretty good and we could take your place.
Is Pete the pest that's standing outside?
He's the pest outside there.
Shall I bring him in?
Yeah, why don't you, so we can talk to both of them together.
Hiya there.
Hello there, Pete.
Hi, Pete.
How's everything going?
Pete, I'm Bob and Mrs. Ray. I guess
I
you know that. You probably recognize us from our photos.
You don't look much like your photos. You're a lot older.
I'm not telling them. They look all more aged.
No, we're going to have a sample of the repartee, which you would...
What?
The repartee, which you engage in as junior Bob and Ray's.
Well, these are the best clothes we could wear.
No, I mean, are you going to give us any kind of a routine, such as you would be doing on the radio... if you were taking our place.
Oh, a supermarket or something?
Yeah.
All right. Well, we have... This is at a supermarket.
Through the supermarket bet.
Yeah, this is when we junior bar...
this is when we send you out to open a supermarket. We don't have to go.
Folks, ladies, shoppers, we're over here. Junior Bar and Ray by Frozen Foods.
Right next to the soft drink display.
Come on over here. And,
we'll be happy to sign your autographs, or our autographs, and to give you free pictures.
Come on over, folks. We're over by, lady.
They're not paying much attention,
no,
Pete. No. Oh, no.
Wait a minute. Hold it just a second, boys.
That's just about the way it works out, though, Ray.
It's pretty good. I think, though, you need maybe a couple more jokes in there.
Got to punch it up with a few jokes, and it might work.
I think, too, that maybe your size doesn't seem to...
conjure
up a picture of the real Bob and Ray.
4'6".
Yes, I know, but of course that's offset by the fact that you weigh almost 300 pounds.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to do, fellas, but good luck on your showbiz career, and...
okay, then.
We might be able to line you up for an interview with some other radio team.
Well, maybe we could be a Junior George Gallup, or is it
Frank?
Yeah,
or Hugh Downs. Well, let's go and talk to them.
Come on. Bye, boys. Good luck.
What will the weather be? To find out, let's check with Bob and Ray's weather forecaster stationed atop Mount Washington in New Hampshire. Clifford Fleming. Cliff, can you hear us all right?
Engineer, would you turn that on, please? I mean, we were talking about this just before we went on the air. You knew exactly...
Attitudes, Dale. Oh. And if that keeps up, we certainly should be enjoying the fine peachy weather that we have experienced so far this past few weeks.
Engineer, can he hear me now, or is it just a one-way conversation?
I can't hear you, Dave.
It's probably...
just a one-way conversation,
no,
Dave.
If you heard what I said...
Once they switch the weather controls to Mount Washington, we're on the air, and that's it.
Well, you're on the air now, Cliff.
Right. Well, I must be hearing you then, Dave.
Well, I'm confused here. Can you hear me now, what I'm saying?
Fine, Dave.
No, he's not hearing me at all, Engineer. Do you suppose it's garbled?
If we should have a continuation...
Is it garbled?
What's that, Dave?
Is it garbled?
Would you repeat it, please?
I'm wanting to know if I'm coming through...
Engineer, I can't hear what he's saying now. If you could just kind of boost it up a little bit.
He's awfully garbled.
I feel as if I'm garbled, Engineer.
He's garbled.
I couldn't be because I haven't been down off the mountain for 3 weeks.
That isn't what we mean by being garbled.
Now I hear you, Dave.
Okay, Cliff. What's the weather outlook?
Fine. Peachy weather, Dave. A great 4 week season.
Good. And you coming down this summer?
Yes, just as soon as I get my replacement up here, Dave. I'll be down, I'll sure pay you fellas a visit.
I hear the whistle, which means that you have a little bit of mountain fever. And
still have a touch of it, Dave.
Maybe it would do you good to get down to the big city.
Think it would.
All right, cut him, Engineer.
You've
been listening to Clifford Fleming, Bob and Ray's weather forecaster atop Mount Washington in New Hampshire.
Time now for a Bob and Ray feature, Child Guidance in a Zickening Fashion, with Dr. Walter Zickening, head of the Bob and Ray Child Guidance Department. Doctor, we have had a lot of mail since your last visit, but we're going to dispose of that in the interest of an editorial I believe you have prepared. Doctor?
Oh, I'm sorry, I was reading ahead. I'm glad you asked that question.
No, well, I didn't ask any questions. Oh. We weren't going to have questions and answers today. Instead, we were going to hear a few words of advice from you to the parents of children.
No matter how you look at it, a teenager who spends a year teaching pigeons to read doesn't create the stir caused by the youngster who channels his energies into trouble. And by the same token, we shouldn't forget that for every teenager who gets into trouble, there are hundreds who show every bit as much patience, diligence, and ambition by teaching pigeons to read. No one is more aware of this than the Museum of Science, a boon to the youngster planning to make something of his life. At the recent New England School Science Fair, 21 boys and girls from six states set up...
Oh, from the, six states.
Six That's... states. Set up their projects in the museums. Auditorium included... Were
in the museum's auditorium.
Included were the four pigeons a 16-year-old student had painstakingly worked with every year for a year. She was studying animal behavior.
I think that's every day for a year.
Every year for it. What did I say?
He said every year for a year. That, it's a small thing. I just want to clarify.
She was studying animal behavior by teaching her pigeons to recognize word symbols. More of these youngsters...
You've been listening to Dr. Walter Zickening, author of Child Guidance in a Zickening Fashion.
Saturday morning.
Our Bob and Ray
Some
Child Guidance Director.
Of them.
Thank
to
you,
learn
Doctor.
About
and we'll look
their
for
world
it again
in a Science Explorers program. Still, others give over.
Now up to Herkimer, New York, and the launching pad belonging to the good Professor Groggins. Wally Ballou there to cover it. Come in, please. Wally Ballou in Herkimer, New York.
Herkimer, New York. Wally Ballou speaking. And we're standing next to Professor Groggins' experimental space satellite. A satellite in which he hopes to circle the world. Professor Groggins, you've changed your plans from the original space ship that you were going to shoot for the moon in.
Well, as you know, the changes and modifications are coming so rapidly now, Mr. Ballou, that it's very difficult for a space scientist or an aerodynamics engineer, as I call myself, to keep up with the times. There is a saying that if it's in production, it's obsolete, and I think that that bears a good deal of truth to
truth
it as
to
you
it.
Look at my modified satellite machine. I have made several changes. First of all, I've discovered I have to use a plenty powerful engine for the original thrust.
Much more than the lawnmower.
Way beyond. I have to use almost, I think, a solid fuel now that is quite expensive. I will achieve, I think, orbital speed after approximately 3 hours out into space, Mr. Ballou, and that means that I can travel around the Earth at approximately 16 feet.
And you'll be inside the sphere as we see it here now. I wonder if we could take a look inside and describe it for our radio listener.
I wish you would, please, Mr. Ballou.
This is the door I'm going through now. He's wiping his feet before stepping inside, I suppose.
Well, that's
for
training since childhood.
For cleanliness. Here now, we're standing inside this spherical ball, approximately 8 feet in diameter, would you say?
That's it, exactly. 8.5 feet this way, and about 4 feet that way.
I notice a little bulge there on that one side.
That's where I put my head. So
so I can look out and see what's going on around me.
Will this satellite be spinning as it traverses the Earth?
It will rotate on its own axis, if that's what you mean.
Will you be going round and round inside, or will you be
right.
stationary?
That's something that I'm afraid of, but I don't know how it will turn out, that feeling of
you bothered by vertigo?
I'm sorry?
Are you bothered by vertigo?
No, I've never had those troubles. I wear these rubber stockings most of the time.
Well, let's move on to something else, Professor. Have you got any date for the actual launching, and do the newspaper people still think you're nuts?
Well, they think that I'm a little wacky. My countdown has reached 30, but that happened about a week ago, and I had to hurry through several more modifications, so we'll pick it up at 29, I think, sometime today.
Lots of luck to you, and we'll hang around to see what happens.
For the fun of it, I think I'll make it 29 now, and then stop it again.
It's 29 now, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be counting down a little later. From Herkimer, Radio's Handsome Wally Ballou, returning it to our main studios.